We're going to go ahead and first hear from Dale Williams. He's going to just give us a little heads up on the situation down at the Bundy Ranch in Nevada. He's got some good information on that. If you haven't heard about that, that was where the BLM got really aggressive and started rounding up cattle from a rancher down there, and they got crosswise with each other, and they were going to it looked like they were going to it was going to come down to a sort of a military standoff situation, and a bunch of patriots went down and got the BLM to back off. And it was a good thing that Dale can talk about what happened there and what really went on and what that means.
I'm Dale Williams. I was with K-Talk Radio on and off for 10 years. Some of you will remember me from that. Occasionally abortive and sometimes successful effort to bring freedom movement, patriot movement content to the radio in Salt Lake City and in the environs of Salt Lake City. I am a civilian now, no longer a broadcaster, and so I was at home doing something when I heard about the situation at Bunkerville. And, you know, I think news like Bunkerville, like this hassle that this rancher is involved in, it hits some of us in the, you know, medulla oblongata, or, you know, in the subconscious before it hits the frontal lobe. In other words, I have such an aversion to what was going on down there, having lived through watching the siege at Waco, the abuse of those people, the ultimate death of those people. And I know so much, having done research for radio shows for years and years, I know so much about smaller incidents that a lot of people in walk-a-day life do not, or work-a-day life, don't familiarize themselves with. And so I determined, when I saw the first confrontation, where you probably remember on the news, people were kind of fighting the BLM. The BLM was trying to get 10-wheel dump trucks and front loader. They had a big trailer with a backhoe on it, and they were trying to get onto a road and get out after having done something with the Bundy's cattle. The Bundy's didn't know, but you remember the confrontation where there were quite a few women, and they were arguing with the BLM, and Ammon Bundy was tasered in the chest several times. Do you remember him ripping out those taser wires? Any of you see that on TV? You're too busy to you guys back here saw it? All right. Anyway, I got a chance to meet Ammon Bundy. Ammon is one of the sons of Cliven Bundy, who is the rancher. At any rate, I just felt very strongly I needed to go down there, and I, not armed like a lot of other people, but just to make it more difficult, make it another speed bump for whatever the feds were going to ultimately do, because the rumor was persistent that there was great force in place around the Bundy Ranch. Now, everybody understands, I hope, in the room that the issue is that this rancher, Cliven Bundy, 68 years old, had decided not to pay his grazing fees. See, the government even has me talking like his grazing fees, right? The grazing fees that the government purported alleged that he owed 20 years ago, he stopped paying that, because you have to sign a contract to pay for those, to pay those fees. And you're then bound in that relationship with the BLM. Well, Cliven did not recognize the authority of the federal government in this instance. The land itself is almost denuded of anything for cows to eat. 51 out of the 52 ranchers that did operate 20 or 25 years ago in Clark County, where Cliven Bundy operated and where his family has been since the 1870s, 51 out of 52 of those ranches have disappeared with the help of the BLM, with the, you know, that helping hand to organize, help them organize their ranching activities. So anyway, I wanted to go down there. I did not know that the militia units were going down there yet, but let me just tell you a couple things about the great day of April 12th that you might not know about. April 12th was the day that the confrontation happened, where people on horseback and afoot, hundreds of people went and confronted the BLM who were holding Mr. Bundy's cattle and had set up like a forward operating base. It looked very much like an FOB in the military overseas. I'm getting ahead of myself a little bit here. My own journey was interrupted. I wanted to go down on the Wednesday or Thursday before April 12th, but I got in communication with a guy named Will Grigg. Does anybody remember William Norman Grigg? He's the senior editor of New American Magazine for 14 years, and he's an independent writer now and has become an icon of the freedom movement. He made some overtures to me to the effect that he wanted to go, but that he couldn't go until the 15th, Wednesday the 15th. So we delayed our trip down to Bunkerville, the area of the ranch. It's about 9 miles from Mesquite. And we missed the big show. We missed the big event, which we hope is a seminal event in the 21st century for the future of America. If you're not familiar with what happened, you're probably living on another planet. But if you watch strictly television for your information, what you saw were a few dozen horse-mounted men, ranchers, friends of Clive and Bundy, employees, and hundreds of civilians, most of whom were unarmed, going and confronting the federal police about what had happened to the cattle that they had control of, and also about insisting that they finally release all these cattle. Here's the part that you can't learn from TV. There were militia there. The TV could not omit that entirely, but there were uniformed militia there, which I think is important. Not just people who, God bless them, I think it's great that an individual would go down there and volunteer and bring his Second Amendment tools and be present. I think that's terrific. But it's kind of another escalatory step, isn't it, when the organized militia, actually it's the unorganized, but the militias that have some level of organization, that have uniforms, that have unit insignia, showed up. And some of those guys knew something about infantry warfare, about this kind of a situation. And there were counter-sniper positions set up to countervail the government sniper positions that were aiming at the citizens. And there were a lot of people in what is known as full battle rattle. In other words, they're well prepared. And the government behaved itself on that day. And the local people are grateful. You'll hear on CNN or Fox News or whatever stories about local people are nervous because there's all these armed people and there's no supervision and the rule of law and all the rest of it. Don't necessarily believe that that's the majority. The people that I talk to and the people that I see in off-channel interviews were largely grateful for the presence of the militia because it was a neutralizing, it was let's keep this party polite type of an influence, their influence there.
Sorry, we have to give them a round.
Absolutely. Now there's a little bit more that would have escaped you if you just strictly watched network TV to get your information about this. The government forces, and by the way, the only American forces there as far as I'm concerned, were the militia. Maybe that'll rub you wrong, but I don't see Dan Love, who lives here in Salt Lake, the special agent of the BLM who was in charge of that thing, and his special forces operator wannabe guys with all of their high-tech equipment and their rifles and their machine guns. I don't see them as American forces. I see the militia as the real American forces there. That crowd was confronted with the threat by the government that they're going to be shot. They were told to back off or we will shoot. Lethal force is authorized. I haven't seen that reported on TV. So what you have is women, old men, young men, some militia scattered around, guys on horseback who were unarmed, as far as I know, told that if they did not stop advancing towards the federal position, they're going to get shot, and they did it anyway. So it was just, it takes terrific guts. If Well, they did. Okay. A lot of unarmed people there, just the same. So, anyway, I went down and I was able to meet Mr. Bundy and meet some of the militia there, meet a couple of the sons. I don't know how much detail we really want to get into here this evening. Seems like we have a little more time than perhaps we thought. An interesting anecdote, I asked Ammon Bundy, who was the guy who got tasered with three or four different taser devices. Ammon, you know, every time I've seen somebody tasered or seen videos of people tasered, they basically, they can be a big, strong, strapping man, and they fall to the ground and break dance without music. I mean, you know, they flop around and like a fish and scream involuntarily. I said, what happened to you with that? And he said, well, I didn't know that. I didn't know you were supposed to scream and carry on and flop around and everything. I just started yanking them out and stepping on the wires. And, it's remarkable. The father, he's got 14 children, Clive and Bundy. The rancher in question who supposedly owes $1 million in grazing fees, $1 million. Let's pause on that for just a second. You must be Dr. Tracy. It's nice to meet you. You are. Well, that's great. That's right. You're up from Mesquite. It's good to see you. $1 million divided by 20 years. So he owed $50,000 a year. So now I'm a guy who grew up back east where everything grows and is green and lush and everything. I get out on the prairie around here and I think it's stark. But there are tufts of grass. You get out and walk around on the prairie down there around Mesquite. There might be a little tuft of grass this time you're here. I didn't see any. I saw very strange trees with thorns, and I saw sort of barrel-shaped cactus. And I tell you, I don't know how those cows can survive. But anyway, Mr. Bundy has racked up $1 million worth of grass somehow in 20 years. So figure that one out. I found the family very articulate. They have legal help now. I can't remember. It's a big name lawyer. Guys, do you know who's come in on the case? Is there? Yeah. Well, penalties, interest. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like another. The thing that a lot of Americans, I think, get sucked into is that this guy is a cheat, that he threatens the rule of law if he isn't dealt with. Now that Dr. Tracy's here, I'll keep my remarks limited to the original, idea of 10 or 15 minutes. But other day, though, we can get into it a little bit here. The rule of law, as administered by who? Harry Reid? Eric Holder? The BLM? Now, people get very angry about the BLM, about the criticism of the BLM, because traditionally, from what I understand, they've had a lot of very responsible people employed, and they've done a lot to keep ranchers from getting too territorial. In other words, keeping fishermen and hunters off of land they have no right to debar from access to by hunters and fishermen. And they've done some good things like that. That's obsolesced to me, that fact. I'm sorry, maybe I'm a little radical, but they have become an instrument of Agenda 21. They have become one of the hammers of the Department of Justice, of the Department of Homeland Security, that is going to effectuate the depopulation of the outback, of the American countryside. That's a real program, and they're going to be a part of it. And the way they behave, the threats, the military equipment, the helicopters, they killed a lot of cattle. Clive and Bundy, the day I talked to him, had just discovered a 50-foot-long slit trench. There were a lot of cattle in there. They ultimately figured, I think, they've lost at least 40 or 50 cows. That's 3 or 4 day-old information. I mean, there's 100 things. We ought to have a town hall meeting on this sometime. Harry Reid had this deal going with the Chinese, you know? Yeah, that's there. That's great, isn't it? The entity we're spending $700 billion to prepare to a year to prepare to fight in a world war, he's making a ton of money or is trying to make a ton of money.
Rory
is also the Clark County Commissioner and Harry Reid's former chief of staff. I can call him a punk because I'm old now. He's 35. He's the head of the BLM. So, rule of law. So we put a lens on Harry Reid and we find a gangster. I'm sorry, you put a lens on almost any U.S. congressman. This is the Senate Majority Leader of the United States of America doing this stuff, calling the people who went to Bunkerville and effectively laid down their lives. It was a touch-and-go thing. You could have had a deranged individual on either side that would have started that, and probably all of the federal people would have been killed, and many, many of the civilians who were much more numerous would have been killed, and then we'd be living in a different world. But they went down there and offered themselves as speed bumps, and he calls them domestic terrorists. So I don't know. There is, no, to me, no compromising with somebody like that. I have a lot of other stuff that we could talk about. I do want to give way to Dr. Tracy. We've done interviews, Dr. Tracy. I don't know if you remember, on the radio out of Salt Lake City here. It's been a lot of years. Right. So I'm looking forward to your remarks. But let me, maybe I can take the liberty. I just want to read a few things related, or a couple of bullet points related to the rule of law. Now you tell me a couple of, you tell me how you feel. I don't actually say anything, but in your mind, respond to a few of these things. How about this, the systematic violation of your Fourth Amendment rights vis-a-vis the NSA Center? The building itself, the existence of that building. Is that your, was that your will that brought that into existence? How about
Utah.
What's that?
It's in Utah.
Sure it is. It's a slingshot throw away. How about the unchecked growth of the national security state that thing is the heart and soul of? Is that, was that your will? Was that the people's will? How about the unpunished? We mentioned Waco. I got to say this because maybe I'm a little frustrated. I don't get enough time on the air anymore, and I can't rant and rave. Y'all know about the FLIR film. I think it's important not to forget that. Waco was not just the destruction of 80 or so innocent lives. It was the mass murder, beyond the shadow of a doubt, of 80-plus innocent lives. And the reason we know that is because the Texas Rangers were operating a fixed-wing aircraft that had a thing called a forward-looking infrared eye or camera on it. And they caught the feds backing armored personnel carriers up to the back of that compound and hosing down the civilians as they tried to flee the flames in the building. Nothing was done about that. Check out, for yourself whether that's the fact. It is a fact. It is a fact. Nothing was ever done. The Congress of the United States, your rule of law, did a whitewash investigation. There's so many other things. Very, very quickly, the whole federal junta should be put, at a minimum, should do time. And the worst thing about it is they represent a foreign power, not the rule of law, not the will of the people, they are not the representatives of the American people. We've got drone strikes, drone wars going all over the place. We've got $5 billion just spent to foment war in the Ukraine. Was that your idea? $2 trillion. Missing from the Pentagon. I got a list here. I won't burden you with the whole thing. It goes on and on and on. I would just challenge anybody to try to argue that the republic is functioning, that we have the rule of law. It's a dictatorship by a consensus of criminals. And this thing that happened in Bunkerville, Nevada, is the closest thing to the rule of law or to shake up that junta that I've seen in my lifetime. And I would just close by reminding everybody that Thomas Jefferson and other people of his era tried to convey the idea that this system we have, almost don't take it too seriously. I know that'll rile somebody, some people here. But it was known as an experiment. But it wasn't something that you're supposed to cling to, that is the federal government, the central government, at the cost of the revolution. The revolution is more important. The country is more important. The states were meant to be a safeguard, a counterbalance, the real check and balance against federal tyranny. And I think that's the direction we have to go. And the militias have got to be a part of that, because if they can open a can of whoop behind on you, I've got to speak civilly right here, if they can whoop on you without any danger to themselves, the federal powers, they're going to do it. They're going to have no respect. And so, Tom, I appreciate your indulgence in letting me speak. And maybe we can do it again some more at some time and go through the indictments of the central government, which is a foreign power at this point, in my mind.
Thank you, Dale. We really do appreciate your comments. And Dr. Tracy's here, so we'll just, without any further ado, turn the time over to you.
I introduced this little one the last time I was here. In the very front of my book, I put a quote as I dedicated it to my children, who for years have had to listen to Prozac, Zoloft, Paxil. They finally turned to me one day and they said, "Gee, Mom, why do people use Prozac when all they need is a puppy?" So this is my antidepressant. Her name is Baby Blue. And what happens is, if the depression gets really bad, you just double the dose and I bring her sister in. But and to show you that she knows how to fight depression, I brought her favorite food, which she's been begging for from the minute we got out of the car, which is a red pepper. She loves red peppers. So if you take care of your health, you won't have to worry about depression, huh, Blue? Question? Potatoes, not Prozac. Right. Right, just eat right. Eat right.
Looking for an excuse.
So if anybody wants to watch Baby Blue and give her a few pieces of pepper, wrap her up in her blanket. Do you want to, Nancy? Okay. You go cheer up Nancy for a while, okay? Here's her blanket. She's fun. And her diet's actually better than mine, I think. She's got me eating more and more raw food. She loves cucumbers, too, and tomatoes. And anyway, she's crazy. We are going to talk about depression today. I've been doing this for 25 years now. I've lost track. It's been a really long time. I started at the end of 89. And Prozac was first introduced in 1987. There were clinical trials that were run in Utah. So Utah got started on Prozac just a little bit sooner than most places would have because of that. I believe they started those in about 1985. Interestingly, the very first case that I know of a mother killing her child while on this drug happened in Pleasant Grove, Utah. where Gloria Clements took a sledgehammer and beat her 17-year-old son to death while he slept. She then went to the garage and drank everything that she could find in the way of pesticides and anything else, trying to kill herself. As far as I know, she's still out at Point of the Mountain. Probably still has no idea why she's there or why she did what she did. Because it has continued forever, of course, we now have another mother from Pleasant Grove, Utah, that has just been arrested and charged in the deaths of six children.
Seven
now? I heard it was starting to go up. They thought that there might be more. Unbelievable. She looks extremely ill, just to look at her. There's been nothing come out yet on...
I grew up with that girl.
Yes. Really?
Her, I was good friends with her sister, and there was nothing wrong with that girl growing up.
That's what I figured. And it probably was an antidepressant, because that is one of the very first things that I started tracking, was the mothers killing their children on antidepressants. Because it's something that we saw occasionally in the past with LSD or PCP, but it was just unheard of until these drugs hit the market. So I began tracking them very closely. I could pull out my scriptures and show you all the different obituaries I've got of funerals that I've gone to with other mothers here in the state that have killed their children since. We've got Debbie Lucell, Margaret Castanis, the mother up in Syracuse that just killed her two daughters and herself. They did say that she was being treated for depression. And we know what you give when you treat somebody for depression. But when I did the Lisa Gibbons show in 1999 on the subject of mothers on these medications killing their children, we were told, as we set our foot on the stage to go up, you can say the word antidepressant, but you cannot say the brand names of these drugs because of our advertisers. That was 2 years after they were allowed to start advertising on television. So if you think you're going to hear anything on mainstream television now, when you look at the ads, all you got to do is look at the ads and you'll know whether or not you're going to hear anything. And I don't watch TV, but occasionally, the last little while, I've been able to watch the news on television, and I don't think I've seen anything in the way of a commercial that was not for a drug. So if they are the ones controlling what you hear or don't hear, you can take bets you are not going to hear what I'm going to tell you here tonight. In fact, when a Russian camera crew came out to Iowa, when I was living in Des Moines, they spent all day with me to interview me throughout the day and document what was going on here in the United States, because they wanted to prevent what we're going through from antidepressants from happening in Russia. And they asked me if I would give a lecture too, but they didn't let me know till about the last minute, so we just sent out a bunch of flyers, opened my house up, and held a meeting about this size. And afterwards, one of the psychiatric nurses that showed up for the lecture stood up and said, "We never get to hear what you have told us here tonight, but I know it's true because I'm on Lexapro and I've had every one of those side effects that you have listed." And then she said something that got all of the cameras turned on her immediately, and that was, you don't know what's really going on out here. And I said, okay, what's that? She said, 75% of the doctors and nurses I work with are on these drugs. Yeah. I said, oh my gosh, with the terrible impact they have on memory, how do you remember what your patients need? She said, oh, we don't. I'm going, okay. She said, we just keep reminding one another what the patient needs, and then we laugh and joke about how we're getting older. But these drugs have such a strong impact on memory that amnesia is listed as a frequent side effect on nearly all of them. If you can't remember who you are, how do you remember anything else? Glenn Campbell, they are saying now, has Alzheimer's. Glenn Campbell was arrested in 2003 on Lexapro for a DUI. The drugs cause cravings for alcohol. That's the first thing I saw here in the state of Utah where it would really stand out like a sore thumb, was those cravings for alcohol produced by antidepressants. Apparently, he has never gotten off of the drugs. His wife is continuing to talk about his depression. And now they're saying he has Alzheimer's. I can tell you that many, many, many people being diagnosed with Alzheimer's do not have it. What they have is a prescription for an antidepressant. The same is true for autism. We now know that if a mother has taken an antidepressant within 12 months before the conception of a child, that the child, that she has three to four times greater chance of having an autistic child. And what's Utah's rate? 3 to 4 times higher. Here, where we've been the antidepressant capital for so long. So the number of birth defects is absolutely staggering. In fact, Todd, did you bring your computer?
Yes.
Do you mind bringing it up and let's go through some of the things that we've got now? I just finished updating my book for 2014, first update in quite a few years now, with all the latest information that we have on these drugs. We have left the original text as is and continued to add to it just so that everyone can see what we already knew before these drugs hit the market, and then over time what we've learned. I can tell you that science is getting closer to catching up with what I put in the first edition, but they're still way behind. I had a mother contact me clear back in the mid-90s wanting to know if I thought her use of Prozac might be why she had 3 autistic children in a row. Of course, I told her, certainly. Autism and Alzheimer's have long been known to be a condition of elevated serotonin. And that's exactly what antidepressants were designed to do, is elevate serotonin levels. That's the big serotonin lie. They told us that if you're depressed, you have low levels of serotonin. It's not true. According to research, what you have is low levels of serotonin metabolism, which means that you're able to break that chemical down so it can turn into things like melatonin to help you to sleep and other things that your body needs. Tragically, the antidepressants work by going in and preventing or inhibiting. That's what a serotonin reuptake inhibitor is one that will inhibit the metabolism of serotonin. You inhibit the metabolism of serotonin, you're going to end up with these elevated levels. And let me just read for you just a few things, and this is what I took to the FDA. If you read through the science on serotonin that we had before antidepressants hit the market, well, before the SSRI antidepressants hit the market, their golden gooses that they've made so much money on, we knew that when, in fact, the doctor that found this in Israel called it serotonin irritation syndrome, where people were not able to metabolize serotonin. And this just happened to them naturally. It wasn't any chemical that they used, as far as we know. They suffered from migraines, hot flashes, irritability, sleeplessness, pains around the heart, difficulty breathing, a worsening of bronchial complaints, sleeplessness, pains around the heart, difficulty breathing, a worsening of bronchial complaints, irrational tension and anxiety, horrifying nightmares. PTSD is not necessarily coming from war, but it's coming from the antidepressants they're peddling to the troops. That's where their horrifying nightmares are coming from, is this elevated serotonin. By the way, we're losing 660 to suicide every month in our military. But we've got another 1,600 on top of that a month that are trying to take their lives.
Just in the military.
Just in the military alone. But in the military, we know, I've got a young man I've been working with. He was told before he went to Iraq that he would have to take an antidepressant to go. He went to his father, who was a social worker, and said, "Look, Dad, this is what they're telling me. What do you think I should do?" And, of course, he said, "Well, let's see, son. You're going to be carrying a gun. You're going to be faced with life-threatening situations. I don't think it's a good time to be on a drug that is a mind-altering drug." So he didn't take it. Until a year ago, when they worked on his knee, they did surgery on his knee because he had problems with his knee, gave him trazodone, which is the antidepressant the Navy Yard shooter was taking. Thank you. And then he started developing the nightmares. Then they thought he might have PTSD. They added more antidepressants. He then started having all of these thoughts about killing his commanding officer. That's pretty normal anyway, but but he was actually making plans. He knew that the thoughts were not right. So he told them that he was having these thoughts. They diagnosed him as having homicidal ideation, which is a side effect of some of these antidepressants. It is a listed side effect. So here he went through it anyway because of his knee, because of having problems with his knee. And this is a kid who knew full well, because his best friend, clear back in the mid-90s when his mom got one of the first copies of my book, she's my best friend from Germany, and she got a copy of my book, read through it, called me. She said, "Oh my gosh, we just had one of your tragedies here in our little tiny town in Kansas. This was like the nicest man in town. He's just stabbed his wife, two children, and then shot himself." The wife and two children survived. One of the children was this boy's best friend. So he saw it in his best friend. The family knew full well what caused it. The father had been on Zoloft only 5 days when this happened. They went, they actually went and did the Geraldo show with me when I did that show and talked about what happened. So this kid had seen firsthand what these drugs could do, yet they put so much pressure on him when he started in the service that he went to his father and asked what he thought instead of telling them where to go right off the bat. You wanted to say something. And see, that's the worst, going on and off. The FDA has warned that any abrupt change in dose of an antidepressant can cause suicide, hostility, or psychosis. You do not abruptly change the dose, whether you're going up or down on the dose. You cannot do that. Yes. In fact, that's what I was just going to read through here for you right now. According to all of this research we had before these drugs were ever introduced to the market, you find elevated serotonin in psychosis or schizophrenia. In fact, Osama bin Laden's son, Omar, has been diagnosed with schizophrenia. His doctors say it is a direct result of the use of antidepressants. Mood disorders, including depression and anxiety, is another one. Organic brain disease, which is brain damage. Mental retardation, autism, and Alzheimer's, as well as substance abuse, insomnia, violent nightmares, arson, impulsive behavior with no concern for punishment, reckless driving, exhibitionism. I've got all kinds of stories about that. Whew. Hostility, argumentative behavior, etc. So those, it's all through the literature. We knew all of it before. And there were many doctors that spoke out when Prozac was first introduced, saying, wait a minute, what on earth are you doing? Why would we want to increase serotonin? Because we know that LSD and PCP produce their hallucinogenic effects by mimicking serotonin. So when you take LSD or PCP and the brain looks at that, it reads it as a rush of serotonin. So what you have in the form of antidepressants inhibiting your ability to metabolize serotonin is over time, gradually, as you continue to take the drug, unless you can't metabolize the drugs and it hits you sooner. But gradually over time, you begin to become psychotic. So it looks like it's you and not the drug. That's the big serotonin lie, is they're actually causing, they're causing the psychosis, the schizophrenia, the mania. It's all elevated serotonin. That bipolar went up from 1996 to 2004 when these drugs were really getting out there as they started to advertise them after Oprah did her big show in 93 on these drugs. All these mothers were running into the doctor saying, my kid needs this drug. But anyway, as soon as that happened, and these drugs rushed out to everyone, bipolar increased by 4,000%. 4,000%.
I'm not familiar with the Oprah show.
Oh, Oprah just did a show on the drugs. Yeah, it was basically promoting them. She had Dr. Jim Goodwin on, who was known as the Pied Piper of Prozac, from Wenatchee, Washington. We actually went out to Wenatchee and had a conference in the spring of 1994, just before my book hit the market. And Jim Goodwin came to our meeting, and he said, he told us, right, he didn't care, he was on Prozac himself. So he told us that he had 800 of his patients on either Prozac or Paxil at that time. All of his patients. He had 800 total. And he had all of them on either Prozac or Paxil. And I said, if you don't get your children off of these medications, you are going to have false accusations of abuse all over town. Because the drugs in producing these horrifying nightmares, many of them are sexual nightmares about being raped or abused in some way. So you begin to believe that you're remembering something because you're having these horrifying nightmares. So you begin to accuse people, whoever happens to be in your dream. Make sure you're not in anybody's dream who's on these drugs. And it was 6 months after I gave that warning that Wenatchee, Washington had the largest sex ring sting we have ever heard of. There were 43 people who were imprisoned wrongfully, and the state of Washington ended up paying out $100 million for that. And that was one little girl who was a foster child, and it's really hard to find a foster child not on these drugs because they really peddle them to those little kids. There's nobody to stop them. So this little foster girl who had been on Prozac and switched to Paxil just recently just started going with her foster father, who was the police chief, and saying, we had an orgy there and there and there and there. The primary president and her husband spent 2 years in prison. One of their children escaped from DCFS and did a show with 48 Hours on what had happened. I don't know if you remember that, but it's been a while. You had a comment.
I have a question. I have a friend that wanted to come tonight, but she didn't. You mentioned you get your kids off the medication. Her son is autistic and is on the medication. She just does not know what to do because if he's not on it, then he's violent towards himself and others.
That's because she's trying to take him off too fast. Or was he that way before? Okay. And did they give him something for ADD before that?
I don't know.
Because Ritalin, you know, the chemical name for Ritalin is methylphenidate. Whenever I speak to kids and I tell them that that's the chemical name of the drug, I then say, so it's what? And they all holler, it's meth. And I say, go home and tell your parents because they haven't figured it out yet. It's an amphetamine. It's really no different. Right. I have a CD on detailing over an hour and a half how you come off of those drugs safely and then how you rebuild after being on them. And we've got that here tonight. So, question? Concerta is just Ritalin in time release. Huh? No. Time release meth? I don't think so. I ran into a pharmacist one day in my hometown down in Arizona. I was just picking up a package insert for one of these drugs for a court case that I had and mentioned to him what I do. And he went on a rant about Ritalin. Whoa. He said, when are these parents going to understand that all this drug does is turn their kids into drug addicts? said they'll put them on Ritalin now and they'll end up on meth in no time. I mean, why do we think we've got a problem with meth right now? We've had kids on Ritalin for how many years? Anyway, we've kind of been all over the board tonight. Let's go through a little bit of some of what we know. I think you know that we have done some research and gathered documentation on all the school shootings and workplace violence shootings. That is on our website at www.ssristories.net. You'll find an entire database. Remember, it's .net. Okay, question? Yes. They were. Yes. Yes, it's true. And you'll find that on that database. You can go through and look at all the different shootings. It'll tell you what they were on. It'll give you the documentation to show you that they were on the drugs. It's all there. There's almost 5,000 cases up there.
What in the drug causes them to do that? I mean, is it that they're getting off of it or they're not taking it?
No, it's the increase in serotonin. There's a study that you can find on our website, and I've also got it in the book. And it says, it's about mutant mice. These were mice that were genetically engineered, and the whole experiment went totally wrong. And these mice ended up being the most violent creatures the researchers had ever seen. So what they did is they started looking to see what happened, and they found that the mice lacked the MAO enzyme. The MAO enzyme is the enzyme that breaks down serotonin. So they determined that their brains were awash in serotonin, just flooded with serotonin. And those researchers stated clearly that the reason for the violence in these mice was the excess serotonin, the elevated serotonin. Drugawareness.org, the SSRIstories.net is the database, and you'll find that on drugawareness.org. Just up at the top on the right-hand side, click, and it'll give you all the school shootings. It'll give you the database of all the other cases. It's all there. I would say that all of those children probably were medicated afterwards. Doctors said that they doubled their prescribing of antidepressants after 9/11. Pfizer jumped in and offered Zoloft for free at first, right after that. Do you remember that? Didn't they? Yeah, didn't Pfizer offer it for free after 9/11? Yeah, it was bad. I think it was Pfizer. One of them did, anyway. So after that, now another thing that's really, really interesting about 9/11 is an article that was put out. I got a copy of it somewhere. It was an LA Times reporter, but it was printed in the Seattle Times. The LA Times never ran it, as far as I know. But he went 3 months later over to Iraq and the whole area over there to interview the Taliban. And he interviewed the Taliban psychiatrist. My first thought was, they've got their own psychiatrist? What was interesting is he said as he walked into the man's office, there were, you know, the regular posters for all of the antidepressants up on his wall. And there was a young girl laying on a couch in the office with her hand to her forehead. And they talked for a little while, and he used pens with a drug name on it. And he said that he had a commander of the army that was on the drugs, and he had a problem with him because he kept putting himself in the front lines so that he would get killed. That was his suicidal ideation. So they talked about that for a few minutes, and then the girl laying there on the couch in the office said, "Oh, doctor, what are we going to do? Do we have to sacrifice another goat so I can feel better?" And his response was, "Nay, nay, Allah has given these drugs great power. Taking them is like swallowing a little piece of God." We got a new sacrament in this world. Yeah. So you can bet that that psychiatrist with that attitude was giving these drugs to everybody he got his hands on in the Taliban. So that could have played a huge part in 9/11 as well. Who knows? I already know who was behind it, but question? I talked about one young girl in my book who actually had been molested by her father. That was documented. But they put her on an antidepressant because of that. After she got started on the antidepressant, then she began to believe that her mother had molested her as well. Really? Well, she then began to tell her children this. They were raised believing this. It just makes me sick to think how often that is happening. They have destroyed more families with these drugs than they've created suicides. Mm-hmm. And I want both of them, and I highly recommend them. Okay, but before we go on, let me talk about one thing that you mentioned about puberty and then bearing children. Let's start with the bearing children first. How many women go into gestational diabetes while pregnant? Quite a few, right? So how many more do you think go into gestational hypoglycemia while they're pregnant? That nobody ever brings up. Hypoglycemia is low blood sugar, the beginning stages of pancreatic breakdown. So if that's what's happening to a lot of these women, let me read right here. I've got from four different medical dictionaries a description of hypoglycemia. Okay, here we go. One lists, these are the symptoms: acute fatigue, restlessness, indisposition, marked irritability and weakness. In severe cases, mental disturbances, delirium, coma, and possibly death. As we look further, we find impaired memory, mood swings, irritability, depression, hyperactivity, inability to concentrate, attention deficit disorder, negative attitude, hopelessness, anxiety. And then one list was in order of frequency: exhaustion, depression, insomnia, anxiety, irritability, headaches, vertigo, sweating, tremor, or an internal shaking, tachycardia, heart palpitations, muscle pain and backache, anorexia, crying spells, phobias, or unjustified fears, difficulty in concentrating, numbness, chronic indigestion, mental confusion, cold hands or feet, blurred vision, muscle twitching or cramps, joint pain, antisocial behavior, restlessness, obesity, staggering, abdominal spasms, fainting or blackouts, convulsions, and suicidal tendencies. That's hypoglycemia. So how many women, I still want to know, go into hypoglycemia, gestational hypoglycemia, that nobody ever even mentions? And what happens during puberty? Something very similar. The reason why women go into gestational hypoglycemia or gestational hyperglycemia, which is the diabetes, is because of the stress of the pregnancy on the body. You need all kinds of nutrition to go through that. Another time in your life where you need all kinds of nutrition is puberty. Your body's making more changes at puberty than it has in the first 2 years of life. So what happens when that stress, that physical stress hits the body? What do the kids want? Junk food, because their blood sugar's bottoming out. They need nutrition. If you hit them with tons of nutrition at puberty and at conception, you're not going to have anywhere near the amount of so-called depression or anxiety or all these other problems that I just listed, because the body and the brain are being taken care of. We're ignoring nutrition. And because this is an LDS area, I'm going to bring up the word of wisdom, because it should affect a lot of you. For those of you that it doesn't affect, listen anyway, because it's good advice. You're told to stay away from certain things, and that's about all anybody ever listens to. They don't listen to what you're supposed to do, which is give your body the nutrition it needs. If we were doing that, we wouldn't have these problems. We've got to rebuild the body and the brain. I can tell you that those that do the very, very best after being on these drugs are those that go to a raw food vegan diet. And I cannot believe that some of them survive what they do when they do that, but they do, they've made it. Good. 40-year cancer survivor, same thing. I've been vegan ever since. I couldn't afford a coffin. Had to go vegan, you know. So, question? Monsanto and the drug companies are like this. If they can interfere with your nutrition by the GMO foods and anything else that they can think of to do to food, then they've got us where they want us, because we're going to need drugs. You either give the body the nutrition it needs, or you do like lots of Hollywood does. They either, just look at Hollywood. They either are real health nuts to keep up with that pace, or they're doing drugs to force the body to be able to keep up with the pace. It's really that simple. Tom?
We don't want to start eating right because we will injure the drug industry. 93% of all pharmaceuticals manufactured go into livestock.
Yep. Yep.
So if you give up eating the deadly food, you're going to destroy the drug industry right off the bat.
That's a good point.
I'm an old rancher dairyman. I'm the vegan cowboy.
Yeah. And Tom became vegan kind of like I did. He ended up on an operating table mainline. Flatline. And so he didn't have a whole lot of choice either.
I had to apologize to my body.
Yeah. Well, that's what it does boil down to. we're not going to be able to get to all of this tonight. Let me read to you just a couple of statements so that you know what kind of information is in this book. Incredible compilation, Prozac, Panacea, or Pandora, is of medical data that will lay the groundwork to educate other professionals. In 15 years of reading books on drugs, I've never read a book with more information or so well documented as Prozac, Panacea, or Pandora. This book saved my life, and these drugs nearly took it. This is like a Bible for me, and I recommend it above all others. You have no idea how helpful and reassuring I have found your book, Prozac, Panacea, or Pandora, has become like a Bible to me. I could not put it down when I started reading it. I would like you to know how much comfort I've gained as a result of your work, and that I have recommended it to all of my Helpline clients in hope that it will give them the same reassurance that I got. I always say to people, if you can only afford to get one book on this subject, Ann Blake Tracy's book is the one I would recommend above all others.
What's the name of that one?
Prozac, Panacea, or Pandora. Our Serotonin Nightmare is the 2014 version that's out now. Very bold and informative. I was stunned at the amount of research Ann Blake Tracy has done on this subject. Few researchers go to as much trouble aggressively gathering information on the adverse reactions of Prozac, Zoloft, and other antidepressants. I had reactions to this class of drugs and did exhaustive research, coming up with only bits and pieces of information, trying to find out exactly what happened to me. All the doctors that I visited were ignorant to what was happening to me, but after reading the book and understanding exactly what happened, why it happened, and knowing that I wasn't alone with these new symptoms, I came to the realization that it was the drugs that caused those problems. She truly knows more about the subject of the effects of SSRIs on the human mind and body than any other doctor or researcher that I know of. So I'm just to read, you know, a few statements by people to show you that if you need the information, you're going to find it here. I have spent probably 14 to 16 hours a day for 25 years. I tried to take Sundays off, except for when I was kind of serving people, which I do a lot of, but it's all been totally devoted to this. My daughter can attest to that. Our next door neighbor, the little girl, came over one day and she said, "Do you ever stop?" She said, "It doesn't matter what time of day I come over, what time of night I come over, you are always working. Do you ever quit?" But until these drugs are off the market and these nightmares end, how do I quit knowing what I know? I mean, this is just horrendous. We are losing more people. Well, we know that we're losing more military personnel to suicide and have been since about 2007. We've been losing more to suicide than we were in combat because of these drugs. So you got to know the same thing is happening in the public. I mean, look at this. We didn't hear about road rage, air rage, any of this other stuff going on, the school shootings, the murder suicides with entire families being wiped out. News used to be boring. When I grew up, it was boring to watch the news. Not anymore. Question? The same thing is happening to the first boy who was shot at Columbine High School, who has lectured with me extensively. He's the only one that sued the drug company for causing Columbine. He has now been picked up by the state, committed, and drugged for 5 years. We have tried and tried to get him out of that system. It is, people have no idea what's going on out here. No idea. I picked up the paper a couple of days ago when they talked about this new program where they're going to go in and they're going to treat people in their own homes for mental illness. I thought, oh my gosh. That'll keep them from having to commit them to hospitals. They can stay home with their families so they can slaughter them. That's the part they left out. And they're forcibly medicating them while in this program. In fact, they said that they would either have a physician or other prescriber. That was number one on their list of people who are coming to help. The whole situation has gotten to be so frightening. I don't know if you heard me on KTOC Radio yesterday, but I mentioned the case of Officer Edward Lutz. Officer Lutz was on Luvox, the same antidepressant that Eric Harris at Columbine was taking. And he wanted off of the drug, not knowing how, dropped off cold turkey. He ran across the street. He started believing that his 11-year-old daughter had been molested by the neighbors. So he started drinking, which is common in the withdrawal. It's common both in serotonin regulates blood sugar. One of the first things I saw was this craving for alcohol, which made me realize that the drug was dropping the sugar levels. That's why you drink. It's hypoglycemia. If they would tell alcoholics that they're hypoglycemic, to change their diet, they would be over alcoholism in no time. But they don't do that. So anyway, the cravings for alcohol come with these drugs. They also come in the abrupt withdrawal from the drugs because that's a shock to the body. The pancreas is hit by stress, the first organ hit by stress. So when the body is stressed, or the brain is stressed, or your spirit is stressed, the first physical reaction you have is a drop in blood sugar. So because he dropped off of his meds cold turkey, he began drinking to compensate for the blood sugar drop. I'm sure he had no idea why, but that's what's going on in the body. So he ran across the street, killed three, went next door, killed two more. Then he drove to the next town where his best friend was the police chief and tried to kill him before he killed himself. This was a decorated police officer, highly decorated police officer. Now, what if he was your neighbor? How many neighbors do you have in his position right now? If there has ever been a situation in our entire lifetimes, in the history of the world, where we need to be our brother's keeper, this is it. Because what's happening to your neighbor could be your nightmare next. We need to tackle this as an entire society. We've got to educate everyone around us. It's the only hope we have. And like I said, they're not going to get educated on television. They're not going to get educated on radio. I used to do long interviews with Coast to Coast, the biggest radio station in the country, the biggest radio program, the most popular. We did incredible shows, got a lot of information out. And then about the year 2000, 2001, they got bought out. You haven't heard hardly a thing since. I think I've been on maybe twice for a few minutes. I did do a show last year with John B. Wells, who's just been asked to leave Coast to Coast. That tends to happen a lot when I do shows with people, but I don't tell them beforehand. And that probably wasn't up in the Layton area, right?
Manti.
Am I surprised?
Well, I agree. There's no side effects. They are direct.
Yeah. They're direct effects. Exactly. It's happening everywhere. Well, let me see if I can pull it up here and turn it around so you can see it. I could hold the book up, but I don't think that's going to show you quite as well. I've got brainwave patterns in here of somebody on Prozac. And when you see it, it'll take forever to get there. Let me pull it up in the book. See if you can see these brainwave patterns. The top ones, it's a 30-year-old man who's been on Prozac for, okay, thank you. He's been on Prozac for 6 months. Yes, the two below are normal brainwave patterns. The two above show that the man who's being tested and talking to those doing the tests on him is in a complete and total anesthetic sleep state and dreaming while this is going on, while he's talking to them. Nobody's home. You want to know why people are talking about zombies? This is it. Nobody's home. That's why they talk about the blank stare in all of these shootings. You'll almost always see it. I looked into his eyes and nobody was there. That's because that's what the brainwave patterns look like. Nobody is home. It's called scientifically a REM sleep behavior disorder. And that is a condition in which you act out nightmares. You hear about it with Ambien, but 86% of those being diagnosed with REM sleep behavior disorder are taking an antidepressant. And that is where you're acting out your worst nightmare. I can't tell you how many times I've heard that from patients. I've acted out my worst nightmare on this drug. The last thing you would ever expect them to do. Look at Andrea Yates. She was a nurse. She was an incredible mother. She took her children out of school to homeschool them so she could spend as much time with them as possible. Her whole life was devoted to those children. But on two antidepressants at maximum dose, the world saw what happened. She had had her meds changed just the day before. From 1.5 times the maximum dose of Effexor down to the maximum dose, a huge drop. And Remeron was taken from 45 milligrams up to 60 milligrams, the maximum. Both of those were abrupt changes. And we all saw, Rusty said to me one night as we were talking about this, her husband, he said, this literally was her worst nightmare. She could have thought of nothing worse than losing her 5 children. I've heard from patients that they lose their agency with the first pill. They can no longer. That's what a mind-altering drug is. It alters your behavior. It's in control. You're not. And There was one other thing I was going to tell you about that. I can't remember now. It'll come. Too many things. When it comes, I'll tell you. Richard? Oh, good question. Everybody knows who Andrea Yates is, right? She's a Texas mother who drowned her 5 children. Yeah, sorry. We've had so many since then. All these mothers driving their children into oceans and lakes and rivers. Yeah. Well, that's a good question. I can tell you that the doctor from my hometown, who was a wonderful man, who found my beautiful daughter for me to adopt. He actually was in the hospital himself at the time with pneumonia when his daughter, who was a nurse, went running down the hall to say, "Dad, I found a baby." He jumped out of his hospital bed and ran down and said, "I know a couple who wants this baby." I owe him so much. And yet, when he came to Provo, he got started on Prozac. And he killed his wife and himself. And the reason and how I knew he was on Prozac was one of his patients called me for help. He was a guard out at the prison. And he said, "I'm afraid that Prozac is probably the reason why I have a plan made out to kill everyone on death row." And he said, "The reason why I think it's Prozac is because my doctor just killed his wife and himself on Prozac." And he said, "I know he never would have done that." But why this area? I had a fellow, a Catholic fellow, actually, tell me in the very beginning when I first started my research. He said, "You know, they targeted Utah with these drugs." And so I played sort of dumb, and I said, "Oh, come on, why would they care about Utah? It's a little bitty state in the middle of nowhere. You know, why Utah?" He said, "You don't understand. Utah is the only state left that as a whole has good, strong family and moral values. They want to break that. They have to break that to accomplish what they're trying to accomplish." And I just let it kind of blow over, and I've thought about it and kept it in the back of my mind ever since. And as I thought about it, I've lived in a lot of states, and I went state by state, and I went, "Oh my gosh, it really is the only state left that really has good, strong family and moral values." And I watched it. I watched it all happen with that statement running over and over in my head. Within 7 years, we went from the lowest divorce rate in the nation to over the national average. These drugs have destroyed more marriages, families. And there are some, there are a few that I have seen that are able to take it for a long time. They usually, if they're lucky, they just end up with the physical side effects like diabetes. They lose their gallbladder. They start having liver problems. But you want to go ahead. We did the same with a case out in California where he was Asian. And I said, "I can take bets that they never studied the Asian population to see if they were fast metabolizers or slow metabolizers." The minute he brought that up in the case, they settled too. And this was a man who drowned his 2 children in the same bathtub with himself. I think he attacked everyone with a hammer first, but anyway, that's one of the things. Another thing is that Lilly, when they put Prozac on the market, they knew it would work at 5 milligrams to do what they wanted it to do, but they wanted to target the general doctors because they knew that general doctors could get it out to more people than a psychiatrist could. So they put it out in a 20 milligram pill instead of 5. so that they would immediately see the boost in their patients. But anybody knows that what goes up is going to come down, so you're going to have a high, but there's going to be a crash in the long run. So, but one patient, let me mention, when I did K-Talk yesterday, I was reminded when someone asked something like this about a caller on the very first show I ever did with them. She called me after the show. She said, "How dare you say these things about Prozac? I don't know what I'd do without it. It saved my life." And she went on and on and on. And she said that she'd been on it for 4 years. I thought, okay, if the lady's been on it for 4 years, she's having problems somewhere. It's somewhere. And so I started asking her questions. What about this? What about that? Have you had this? Have you had that? Finally, a half hour into the conversation, after she tells me that she's a returned Mormon missionary, her husband's a returned Mormon missionary, they were married in the temple, they desperately wanted a child after being married for 8 years, they finally had this beautiful little girl that was their whole life. Half hour into this conversation with her, giving me this entire background, she says, "Well, you know, it does really bother me that I've started shoplifting and I've got my 10-year-old daughter helping me." Yeah. And she said, "I went to the grocery store the other day and I even started putting the cart in my trunk, like, hello." And the guy at the grocery store just came out and said, "I'm sorry, lady, but you can't take the cart with you." You know, like, she was really disgusted that he didn't just stop her from doing what she was doing, because she couldn't stop herself. And her little girl heard her from the other room and came in, and you could hear her in the background saying, "Mommy, shh, mommy, shh." She knew that she could get in trouble because the little girl wasn't on anything. And so she told the little girl to go in the other room, and you hear the door shut. And then she cups her hand over the phone and says, "Isn't it terrible? I don't want her anymore." And I said, "None of this is gonna go away until you get off of this drug." She said, "I can't afford to lose my job." Because that was before we knew how to get off of the drug safely. And she was trying to just come off of the drug. So when they tell you that they're doing great, and it appears that they're doing great, look deeper. It took me a half hour of that conversation before she said, "Well."
So based on what she said, if people are good metabolizers,
they'll do well. Right. But the drug itself, and that's the part she left out, the drug itself will impair that liver system so that you, if you were a great metabolizer to begin with, can become a poor metabolizer on the drug. So it gets you in the end sooner or later. But yes, that's how they can do really well for a while. And I mean, there's a police chief I worked closely with. His wife was on Prozac for 12 years, was able to get off, did fine. They lost a son to suicide on Zoloft. So he apparently didn't handle it as well as his mom. But, you know, I don't know what might have happened. I'm sure she had thoughts that she wouldn't want to tell anybody about, because I hear that from patients all the time. "I wouldn't want to tell anyone the thoughts that ran through my head." So, okay, you've had your hand up for a while. I will admit I was more than shaken. Yeah, I know it's really bad, and yet I've got Relief Society presidents on these drugs who become gay, leave their families. Hello? You know, what do you have to see? By the way, that is a side effect. There's so many antidepressants in the water supply now that male fish are being born with ovaries. So it's even worse than what I thought it was in the gay tendencies. Okay, here, there, and there. Tom?
How many of you would admit to being invested into stupidity for decades? In other words,
I do it all the time.
You know, it's like asking an alcoholic if it's really bad to drink. And we are like
yeah.
that. Nibley was a dear friend of mine, and we had discussions about the mental function of the human race, which is the dumbest animal on the planet. You know that. We are so proud, prideful, that we never want to admit that something that we've gotten ourselves into is bad. And, you know, I've worked in medicine, and I know this situation where you get people that are involved, like on the psychotropics. They're never going to admit that they're a problem because they're now invested into it. They've invested
right.
lifetime into these things. And especially...
Like asking a drunk if they're really drunk.
Right.
I can drive that car. Yeah.
Take your car keys away.
Mm-hmm.
So when people pretend to be well, it's BS.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Right. Exactly. I know. 2 minutes. Right. Right. I love the one on urinary incontinence. You know, side effect maybe sudden death. So let's see. Do I want wet underwear? Do I want to buy a coffin? You just kind of go, hello. Okay, you had a comment. Never St. John's Wort or 5-HTP. Don't forget that. Never. They work the same way an antidepressant does. It's going through the patient into the water supply. So Utah County's is probably a little higher than others, but
not higher than we
sit alone. Not high. Oh wow.
Lehigh's in trouble.
Go ahead. Yeah. How do I put that in a few minutes? Like I said, the CD on how to come off of the drug safely and what to do to rebuild goes for an hour and a half. So, nutrition. If it's low blood sugar that's causing that depression, and if that low blood sugar can even cause suicide. Arvid Fairbanks' son, Justin, was my sculpture teacher at college. And I sat and had a long conversation with him right after he found out he suffered from hypoglycemia. And he sat and just cried. He said, I wish I could tell the world how many of them are suicidal because they have hypoglycemia. He said, I never could understand why my brothers were doctors and lawyers and all I could do is work with my hands. But it was because your brain cannot function without proper blood sugar levels. And look at what we've done. We've gone from... 5 pounds of sugar a year back in the 1800s to 180 pounds a year. That's what it is now. And somebody else is eating my 180 pounds, so I don't know. I think we're done. Everybody else still has questions. Well... for years and years, I've only used distilled or purified water. But we don't even know if that's going to get the drugs out of the water. So that's why I'm out trying to educate everybody. I don't want to have to suffer this myself. You know, and obviously we're going to have to if everybody keeps doing this. But I'd love to answer everyone's questions, but I think we're out of time.
Would you be willing to stay after a little bit and people can come talk to you?
Yeah, I don't mind. Okay.
Okay, so if, go talk to Brandon afterwards for the water question.
Yeah. And also wheatgrass juice and turmeric are supposed to neutralize fluoride, and fluoride is a main active ingredient in a lot of these drugs.
Sodium fluoride is a derivative of aluminum and metals.
Right, right.
Give them the formula for Prozac.
Fluoxetine hydrochloride. Turmeric and wheatgrass juice. I don't know.
We'd invite you to come and talk to Ann afterwards, really.
Yeah, and I've got my ebook here in disc format, as well as CDs on how to come off the drug safely. And I've got 5 different DVDs, one on false memory syndrome, one on bipolar disorder, one on mind control, one on the REM sleep behavior disorder, and one on how these drugs affect you spiritually.
Do we have a website that we can get on
to? Yeah, drugawareness.org. Sorry, I should have mentioned that a few times. Drugawareness.org. And you'll find that database there, too, of all of nearly 5,000 cases documenting what medication they were on and what they did.
There's water filters out there that will take out fluoride as well as chlorine.
Good. Good. Okay. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you, Dr. Tracy. We really do appreciate your time. And I love this format. It would be great to be able to sit here and ask you questions all night. And I know we would stay here and ask you questions all night, because on the physical side of it, everybody's different and everybody's got a different experience. And so we want to know all the details about what we can do physically. The spiritual side of it, I have to say something before we go about the spiritual side of this, because she mentioned how nobody was home. She showed you the picture that I held up of the brainwaves, right? And I know there are many LDS in here, and I want to say this, and you remember this, that Satan wants to have his minions possess the bodies that God created for Adam and Eve, okay? I'm going to say that again. He wants to possess the bodies. The third of the host of heaven that came down here that was cast out intends to possess your bodies. Your bodies are important. That's why the nutrition is such an important part of this. I don't want to sound like I'm disagreeing with anything that Ann said. It was very, very, very important. And the nutrition is super important. And the reason I'm making a point to stand up and say something is that there is an awful situation going on in the world. Okay? It's way more awful than simply 9/11 being an inside job or the Bundy Ranch or whatever it was that has woken you up to the awful situation in the world. It's more than that. The awful situation is that even in our society, where we believe we have the truth as LDS, that we're susceptible. The humble followers of Christ, in many instances, they do err because they are led by the false precepts of men. That's 2 Nephi chapter 28, verse 14. And because of time, I'm going to forego giving you any lengthy sources here, but I've got to get the point out, okay? In consequence of the evil designs that exist, do and will exist in the hearts of conspiring men in the last days, that's why we were given the word of wisdom. He has warned us and forewarned us, okay? And that's in section 89, verse 4, thank you. And then he says that was for your temporal salvation, All right, your temporal and spiritual salvation are linked in this world. You have a spiritual essence within you that is you, and you have this mechanism known as the body that is powered by the light of Christ, by his power, by his energy. He's in and through all things. He's lending us breath day to day, right now. We're all beggars. We are all borrowing time in his creation. He's the light that powers the sun, the moon, the stars, everything. The Savior is in and through all things. He is the Creator God. Of course, there is other gods, the Most High Father. But Jesus, the Creator, came down to save us. Okay? And I do recommend that you go read Elder Holland's talk. I had to give the Elder's Quorum lesson on it. A week and a half. It's entitled Like a Broken Vessel from October Conference 2013. I recommend that you go read it and that you pray about it and that you consider that you're going to get answers from both sides, from the dark and the light sides. I disagree with his comments about what to do with the professional help. And there were many people in my elders' quorum that brought up the idea that taking the drugs was a good idea. I attended the wedding ceremony of one of my friends today who had been on psychotropic drugs for many years of his life and was suicidal and depressed, and it ruined his life for most of his 20s, and he only came out of it because he found God in reality. This is a returned missionary born in the church. Okay, we are ill-equipped. The best thing that Satan has going for him is that we think we know it all and that we're the true church and we're not going to have any problems and that we'll never be led astray. All right? It's a great thing that he has going for him. But this depression stuff is real. This is true what Ann said, that these drugs are hurting people. I have firsthand experience of this, not just from this friend, but many other friends, and I know that every case is different. So we must seek the advice of the Lord. We must find out specifically what he wants us to do to strengthen the temporal so that the spiritual enemies that we have, we're in a war zone, these spiritual evil devils or demons, whatever you want to call them, so that they don't get in. They got into my friend's life. They got into his brother's life. They've ruined his mother's life. And they entered largely because they started out hearing their voices, right? I mean, these devils aren't running around just telling us, oh, look at porn, look at porn, look at porn. They're telling you, you are worthless. You are worthless. You are tired. You can't do anything. This world's going to hell. You hate your wife. She hates you. In fact, she thinks you look fat. That's what the devils are telling you, okay? I'm not kidding. Why do you think it would be anything else? If you believe the story about the third of the hosts of heaven, why do you think that they wouldn't be telling you these things? So strengthen the physical protection you've been given by God. Ask him for help. Ask him specifically what he wants you to do. He will reveal his will to you relative to your temporal salvation and your spiritual salvation if you're willing to diligently seek and if you're willing to be open to the idea that the answers might be a little bit out of the mainstream. Like, don't take the psychotropic drugs, even though the Relief Society president mentioned that they helped her. Okay? That's all I'm trying to say. And then pray for his protection. Read Ephesians chapter 5 about the whole armor of God. And every day, if you're willing to take my advice, pray that he will fill you with his perfect love and his light. Because evil cannot exist in that light. No unclean thing can exist in his presence. And if you ask him to be with you, and you diligently seek him, and you pray for his light to fill you and his love to fill you, and then you ask him to shield you in the full armor of God, I truly believe that he will protect you. I truly believe that. And I've seen it as an eyewitness with my friend who'd been on the drugs, who had tried many different things, had studied and done all kinds of stuff. He was married today, much happier, much less anxious, much improved from a year and a half ago when he finally came to the realization that what he really was missing in his life was the influence of our Savior. And he really tried to connect. And it was as if I was back on my mission. My friend and I had realized that he had this issue with these evil entities afflicting him. And we just said, Matt, you need to kneel down and pray. And so we knelt down and waited for him. And he knelt down and he poured his heart out to God. And because he wanted them gone and he was willing to start that fight in earnest right then and there and not give up and trusted in the Lord, I believe that's what created this huge change in his life. And it was 180 degrees. And I know several people here who know this person who would attest to that. He was married today, beautiful girl, he's happier. Not perfect, but that's just one of the many things that I've seen. So read Ann's book. Do all these things. But don't forget the Savior. Okay. And exactly. right after this, we'll turn it right over to Troy. He'll say the prayer.
Okay. Let me point out, just to add to what he just said, and I'd have a lot of this in the DVD on spirituality, that this life is our physical test. We lived all the laws in a spiritual body. The test here is to prove we can live all those laws in a physical body. And in order to do that, we've got to keep our physical bodies in perfect alignment with the spiritual. And you do that by nourishing. If you've been to the temple, you've heard it over and over again. So, in remembering that, you need to know one thing that I have heard over and over and over from nearly every patient on these drugs is that I feel possessed. I feel someone else's brain is in my body. I've heard that even from atheists. There is the pineal gland, which is known as the master gland of the body. They call it the seat of the soul. It's supposed to be your connection to the spiritual. Its main function is metabolism of 50% of the serotonin in your system. If you overload the pineal gland with way too much serotonin, do you sever that connection? I believe you do. In fact, the 14-year-old girl that did the shooting at the Catholic school back east, she shot her best friend. I called her attorney and I said, was she on one of these meds? And of course he was bombarded with reporters and kind of brushed me off a little bit. That following weekend, Connie Chung did an interview with the girl on 2020. She said, how do you go from having Mother Teresa as your hero and wanting to be a nun yourself to shooting your best friend at school? She said, well, I just couldn't feel God anymore. I said, bingo. I called her attorney the next morning and I said, I don't have any doubt that your client was on these drugs, because this is what she said to Connie Chung. And I can't tell you how many times I've heard that from patients who take these drugs. It literally severs the connection to the spiritual. That is so important. And you'll find on our website the sorcery and spirituality article that I mentioned that I wrote for a minister friend that tells you something that I have found over the years and years of researching these drugs, and that is our sin, if you will, in this, is trusting in the arm of flesh instead of turning to the Savior. So what your friend did is exactly what he should have done. It's time to turn to the Savior and ask him for the help instead of your local doctor, the arm of flesh. Trust in him and what he's given us. And so, anyway, you're right. And I'll be up here for questions.
Come up and talk to her afterwards.
And we've got materials, too.